This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's a great day to be saving money or using technology or living sustainably wherever you find yourself today. Saturday in the park. I'm Tim Echols, the host of Energy Matters. Co-host with me today and guest, KC Boyce. Hey, KC.
Hey, Tim. Good to be with you.
Man, we're going to unpack a lot today, but first, let's just remind the audience of who you are and what you're doing out there. So tell us a little bit about where you went to college, where you grew up, and the company you're working for now.
Sure. Oh, boy. So a little bit of a bio here. So I grew up outside of the Detroit area, got out of there kind of as quickly as I could. Went to school out west in Colorado and landed back here in Georgia because my wife is from the Atlanta area. And just love it. I've been here for two decades, and South is a great place to be. Georgia is a great place to be. Really enjoy living down here. And for work, I work for a company called Escalent, which is a human behavior and data analytics firm, which basically means we go out and talk to customers of various industries. I happen to work with energy utilities and figure out what's going on with customers and how do companies serve them better? How do they make products that meet the needs of customers better? All that good stuff.
You know, from a customer satisfaction standpoint, this is such an important thing to me as a commissioner, and I think to all of our utilities in our state, is giving people a high quality experience that they really enjoy being a customer, that they'll brag to their friends or maybe even, you know, post on social media, but that they, when they write that check or send that money in, that they feel like they're getting real value.
Yeah.
And I mean, is value an important part of what you talk to your clients about?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's funny. I'd be interested in getting your take on this. But when we talk value with a lot of our utility clients, they often think, oh, rates. And you know what? When we analyze our data, that's a part of, but it's a very small part of what customers read as value. So what customers want to see their utility doing, they want to see them active in the community. They want to see them being environmental stewards. They want to make sure certainly that, you know, customer service interactions and billing interactions are, you know, rock solid, right? They take care of issues when they need to. And they want to see the utilities offering products and services that they value. So that could be anything from, you know, budget billing programs all the way through, you know, EV charging or rooftop solar.
You know, little things can sometimes make a difference. And I think about the technology now that banks have of being able to make a deposit via your phone and simply taking a photo of a check, front and back, that has saved me.
Countless hours, right?
Because I get a reimbursement. When I travel, I'll pay for the hotel. You know, I usually do Priceline, so it goes on my personal credit card, and I try to save the state money. So I use Priceline. I'll do the express deal, and I don't even know what hotel I'm going to get exactly, but I'll get that receipt, and I'll get a lot of reimbursement checks. You know, for 100 here, 200 there. And if I had to go to my bank every single time and make that, I mean, this saves me so much time. It's probably one of my most favorite pieces of technology for time saving.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, that's what's really driving a lot of customer expectations, right? Is it's companies like banks that have the mobile deposit. It's companies like Amazon that make it really easy to transact, right? And so people want to see the same from their utility. And utilities are really working hard to try to catch up to those expectations. I'll be honest that, you know, they're maybe not quite moving as fast as the pace of consumer expectations are. But I know talking with our clients really around the country, it's something that's top of mind for every utility, and they're trying to make it easy to transact digitally. They're trying to make things transparent. So if your power goes off, you know what's going on and getting the power back on.
You know, recently a company came into my neighborhood, laid fiber optic cable, and then they sent a rep around to each house to try to get you to switch, right? So I was with Dish, had a satellite through my Windstream account. And even though this was substantially cheaper for a year, because I'm so satisfied with the way my Dish system works, my DVR, watching the shows, the Red Zone, you know, everything about it is a positive experience, that money was not enough to get me to make the switch to an unknown situation.
Sure.
But that affected so much of my evening hours, because there's certain shows I enjoy watching, and of course NFL football on Sundays. So to your point, it's not always about the money.
No, it's not. And you know, it's funny because we look at the industry right now and say there is a lot of risk to energy utilities for people not going to another utility. They don't have that choice in Georgia, right? But in switching where they get their energy from. So you look at the recent Solarize Atlanta program, and something like 60% of the people who put rooftop solar on also got a battery for their home. Now, I can tell you, because I've run the numbers, Tim, it doesn't make any financial sense to put a battery in your home in Georgia. None. Zero. Not even close. But they wanted to. There's an emotional component to making sure that your lights are on and your fridge is running, that you can watch TV, that your internet's up when the power does go out, that people were willing to put that money into it. And it wasn't about the dollars and cents. It was about that emotional connection. There was something that was being offered there that goes above and beyond just saving money.
To your point, recently we approved for Georgia Power to do an experimental neighborhood working with Pulte Homes, to put a battery in every, these are connected homes, I guess townhomes, a battery in every garage, with solar on every roof, with essentially to be able to island that power in the case of a storm. When the power goes out, you can go up to the third floor, to your bunker, so to speak, and it has a little bitty small window type air condition, like a hotel air condition, that's run off of that lesser amount of power that you would have.
Okay.
A couple of lights, a television, and everything in the bathroom, mm-hmm. Up there. And being able to do that, and we did the ribbon cutting, and of course had a lot of people tour it. I mean, that is an incredible thing to do if we can scale that up, you know, with home builders, with realtors in the future.
Yeah, and there's a Georgia-based company called Sunnen. They're down in Norcross, and they actually just launched a giant project like that on Utah with another utility, Rocky Mountain Power. So it is, I think it's a 650-unit apartment building. Same kind of thing, right? They've got the battery in each of the units. They've got solar on top of the buildings. And not only are they providing that backup service for the people who live there, but the utility is also able to access that and use that as part of how it manages its grid, right? So if there's, you know, more solar or wind out west than people are using, they soak it up in the batteries. And if they need more power, they can discharge some of the batteries into the grid. It's a really cool project.
And I think the challenge for companies like Southern Company and Georgia Power and any other utility really in the country is figuring out how to be a part of this transition, right? So that they're included.
That's
and
right.
And that they don't resist it, fight it, drive customers away, but they, in fact, facilitate this transition.
That's right. And they need folks like you to help make it financially worth their while. I mean, their business is investing in stuff, right? And so utilities respond to how the regulators regulate, and giving them an incentive to invest in the stuff that moves us through this transition is really, you know, the financial incentive that they need to make it happen.
We recently approved 80 megawatts of utility scale batteries. And to put this in perspective for folks, and Casey, I want you to give me, you know, your thoughts on how this experiment might go and what we might learn from it. We haven't done it yet, but we've authorized it. A container of batteries, I went out to San Diego and they had, I think, 22 shipping containers. They looked like shipping containers,
yeah,
but I think they were specially manufactured for the batteries. But 22 megawatts of shipping containers were 30 megawatts of battery. So we've approved 80 megawatts, which is almost triple that for the state of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly where Georgia Power is going to want to put these, and we're not micromanaging where they go. We just said, we want you to do 80 megawatts of batteries, and we're going to give you the recovery for this. You go ahead and bring us this project and tell us where you want to put it, and we want to see how this is going to go over the next 3 years. What are some things that we might discover?
Yeah, so batteries are really cool because, unlike everything else on the grid, they can serve both as load and as generation. So that means they can suck up power and they can put power back into the grid. Nothing else out there does that, right? And so what that allows is quite a bit more flexibility for the utility in terms of how it balances the grid, particularly as you have, you know, people putting solar on their roofs, businesses putting solar on their roofs. Georgia Power certainly is investing a lot in solar, thanks to the leadership of you and others at the commission. So they've got a lot more flexibility in being able to balance. And batteries can also do some other things like frequency regulation, making sure that, you know, the you know, sine wave or whatever of the grid is right on that 60 hertz that it's supposed to be, because they can react very quickly.
And that's been one of the challenges, I think, for countries like Germany, as they've been closing down nuclear power plants, coal plants. They lose that ability to do what you've just described.
Yeah, well, I mean, if your generation is all solar, for instance, and you have people coming home after a long day of work as the sun is going down, and they all turn on their AC or they all start cooking with electric tops or whatever, you know, you got a mismatch there. So being able to backfill that, and batteries are a good way to do that.
And is that why California is adding so many batteries out there now, to kind of complement all of the solar that they have?
That's a big part of it. Yeah, they have quite a bit more solar than they need, and so they're curtailing or basically turning off solar during parts of the day. And so they're trying to figure out, how do we shift that solar production to times when that energy is needed? So batteries are part of that story.
You know, sometimes when we create a solution and we think it solves everything, it's actually just ask some more questions, and we've got to figure out how to engineer ourselves out of a pickle sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, right, is that, you know, we're asking some good questions, and it's just some smart thinking that folks have to do.
Stick around. We've got some questions from some folks on Twitter.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Rowe.
This half hour of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden Gregory at Am Law 200 Law Firm with 165 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. Arnold Golden Gregory provides industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief of not if, but how.
And I think they're at AGG Law on Twitter. They're right there in Atlantic Station. And what a great story of that old steel mill and being able to basically take, would you consider that a brownfield site?
Oh, yeah, a big brownfield site.
And turn it into really a destination.
My favorite story about Atlantic Station is apparently the loading pad where they loaded up the trains, big concrete pad. There was so much weight on that instead of rebar in the concrete, they used railroad track.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And we've got, of course, the Wells Fargo Tower there. We've got, you know, all kind of shops and restaurants. And you know the thing about Atlantic Station? I always get lost underneath in the parking.
You're not alone in that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it is one of the most confusing. You're talking about a bad customer experience. It is one of the most confusing parking decks I have ever been in. I mean, I've been in it a bunch, but I still get lost. And like, I'm trying to find a visitor place and get up to AGG or, you know, wherever we happen to be going. And it's like, okay, where exactly am I here? And, you know, you have to kind of come up the stairs to see where am I? You know, you come up, and folks that haven't been in it, it's like two or three levels under the ground. It's very complicated.
So there you go, listeners. If you're ever looking for the commissioner, you will find him wandering aimlessly around the parking deck of Atlantic Station in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's a cool sight. Well, we've got some Twitterverse questions here, so why don't you share that and share the handle of the listener?
Yeah, absolutely. So our first question comes from Lang Reynolds. He's at Lang Reynolds on Twitter, and he says, when is Georgia going to get back on track as a national leader in EV policies?
You know, I am in the process of doing an article for the Atlanta Business Chronicle about EVs, and part of this article, a little bit different article, was in the Fortnightly recently,
which is a trade publication,
as I was advocating for a continuance of the $7,500 federal tax credit that may go away and not be renewed, so to speak, and so obviously that would be a great blow to not only Georgia but to the country. But as I was researching this, I discovered that the original tax credit was introduced by three Cherokee County, wait for it, Republican state representatives. And I had a chance to interview one of them, Chuck Scheid, recently to see, okay, Chuck, what were you thinking about? There was no electric car then, right? The Prius had just come out, I think, in 97. And I think it was the Prius that really inspired him to think beyond just a hybrid powertrain and thinking that one day we will have fully electric cars. And the motivation was, well, if the Prius gets this much more gas mileage and reduces our dependence on foreign oil, imagine what a fully electric car would be.
For sure.
And how are we going to incentivize people to buy these? So he was way ahead of his time, and the credit really wasn't taken advantage of until, you know, really like 14 years later when the Nissan Leaf came out in 2012.
Right. Well, and at that time, Georgia jumped on, right? And we had a $5,000 income tax credit here in the state of Georgia that was 2015 that sunset. Is that right?
It sunsetted then, but it was created as a $2,500 credit in 1998 and then bumped up to $5,000, again, before it was ever needed. And so that it was sitting there in place, really just waiting for a Nissan Leaf or a Tesla to come into existence.
Well, and then when the Nissan Leaf came on the market, we became one of the top markets in the country for electric vehicles.
And the way that the tax credit was structured was that you could take the full $5,000 state tax credit in just 2 years. So you didn't have to buy the car. You could just lease the car for 2 years, and you would still get all of it. So a lot of my Republican colleagues describe that as very rich. That was a rich credit, and I certainly took advantage of it three different times. Did you lease or buy yours?
I bought.
So you bought yours. I leased all three of my vehicles, thinking, not at the same time, but thinking, you know what? This technology is going to get better. I don't know if I want to be stuck with a car that only gets 90 miles of range when the next iteration of the electric car may get double that or triple that. And, in fact, that's kind of what's happened.
Yeah. Well, you're smarter than I am, because I'm stuck with 80, 90 miles. And as you know, on the way up here today, ran into some charging problems. And that wouldn't have happened if I had twice the range that I have.
Yeah, so let's talk about your adventure of getting into the studio today. And, you know, from you planning your trip from Decatur and the places that you went, take us through that and some of the difficulties that you had in your BMW i3.
Sure. So as I said, my EV gets somewhere on the order of 70, 80 miles of range and fully charged before I left home. So there's an app called PlugShare that lets you know where different types of chargers are. Looking at that, I said, well, my backup plan is if, you know, the Georgia Power charger isn't working, or it's, you know, someone's using it or whatever, I'll head to the Classic Center over here in Athens. And looked at the reviews, and the Georgia Power one had some issues, but it looked like it was fixed. Classic Center looked like it was pretty reliable, folks checking in recently. Well, I get to Georgia Power, and it's not working. So I spend about 15 minutes or so on the phone with the company that runs it, trying to get it to work. Doesn't work. I don't have enough range to comfortably make it to the Classic Center, only, you know, a mile and a half or so away. So I plug into the level two for a little while. That's kind of your faster,
okay,
but not super fast.
Yeah. So you're sitting over there on Prince Avenue, just a couple of miles from the Classic Center.
That's right.
Right. But you've run your car down to what you call fumes, but in electric cars, really not. I guess it is fumes because your car does take a little gas, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
No,
so
yours is
pure electric.
So there is no.
There's no. I don't know what it is. Down to a few electrons. Yeah.
Down to a few electrons. Okay. So you're sitting over there. You've called the 1-800 number on the machine.
That's right.
Right. They can't activate it from the mothership, which normally they can.
Right.
And so now there's another choice of a slow charger sitting there, and you're desperately needing some more electrons, so you just plug into that.
That's right.
Right.
So I stay there and get enough range to get over there.
How long did you...
But 10 minutes, 15 minutes,
okay,
something
another
like that.
Another 10 or 15 on the slow charger, just trying to get a mile or two so you could get over to the Classic Center.
So I get to the Classic Center, and guess what? That charger's not working. So I call them up, and they try resetting it, and no dice. But for whatever reason, the EV gods were smiling on me today. That as soon as I hung up, the charger flipped over to say ready, and I was able to plug in and get my charge. So, you know, that's part of what you've got to deal with as an EV driver, especially of those earlier ones that don't have as long a range, is that the infrastructure is not necessarily as reliable. And so I think about it much like a pilot, right? Pilots always think about, if something happens while I'm on this flight, where am I going to divert to? What's the nearest airport that I can get to, right? Thinking about traveling in an EV any distance, around town, you don't even think about it. You plug in overnight, you got the range, you're good to go. But longer distances, you've got to think about, well, what's your backup plan? What's plan B?
It really is a matter of charge when you can, isn't it?
That's right,
and so had you to do it over again, now knowing what you know, you obviously probably would have stopped at the Nissan of Athens and actually got some juice there before you went on into town, maybe.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah. Yeah. And at least got enough so you could get back to the Nissan of Athens.
That's right.
Because they have, that's a free charger there.
It is. I passed it on the way into town.
Yeah. And so to my Nissan of Athens friend, sorry we're charging a BMW on your charger right now. But
we appreciate it.
We do. Thank you. And I've bought three cars from them, so as well as three from Hayward Allen, one of our sponsors. So got some great car dealers here in Athens. So that was a real challenge for you in just trying to get here. So you limped in, you know, to where I was at to pick you up. And while we're doing the show, your car is getting the electrons it needs to get you back home.
Yep, and I should be good to get back home. When we look at the market right now, the median range of electric vehicles is 150 miles. So it's roughly twice what my vehicle has. And when we look at how long, you know, distance people usually travel, that'll cover most of them for most trips. Now, you may have to stop and charge, but you're seeing a lot more longer range models. So it's still absolutely worth checking out, particularly if you've got a second car that you can use on road trips. And so, you know, back to Lang's question, I know you've done quite a bit of work on trying to get something back in place to help re-stimulate the market here in Georgia around electric vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I think this is the same Lang Reynolds that works in North Carolina for Duke Energy.
He does, yes.
And so Duke has recently put forward a very aggressive EV policy up there in building chargers. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah, $80 million or something thereabouts.
Yeah, $80 million is an enormous amount of money to build out a very strong network of chargers. And so I'm excited about what Duke is doing. You know, I think for Georgia, with Cox Enterprises investing in Rivian, right? So now we've got an Atlanta-based company that's spending a lot of money with an electric truck company. I think with Georgia Power partnering with Cox at their Pivot facility, having them down there wanting commercial electric vehicles to be demonstrated there and kind of making that like a showcase almost, a showroom for that. I think with representatives like Todd Jones and others who's a Republican beginning to talk about, hey, this is an economic development issue. This is how autonomous vehicles are going to be powered. So, and it's a great question. It's a great question from Lang, and I think that we are going to get back on track, but it may take just a little while longer.
Yep, Well, thank you for your leadership, and certainly there are lots of folks who are working hard on this, so get plugged in if you're interested in making it happen.
Yeah, if you want to hit Lang Reynolds up, he's at Lang Reynolds, and I know he wouldn't mind us giving that out. He's with Duke Energy, drives an electric vehicle himself. Casey, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm on Twitter at Casey Boyce.
And our show's at Matters Radio. I'm at Tim Eccles, and we would love for you to send us your questions, and we'll talk about them on the air and maybe generate a few more followers for you on Twitter. Well, stick around. We're going to continue with some other questions that we've got, that we've been given, and talk more about utilities and industries and lessons that Georgia can take away.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Velo Solar.
This half hour of Energy Matters is brought to you by Velo Solar. They solve energy challenges for their clients with a uniquely data-driven process. They're a highly technical double engineer-led firm that leverages a proprietary smart grid energy software to evaluate a customer's unique energy profile and needs.
Double engineered.
Double engineered, better than single engineered.
Yeah, I'm a triple dog, but no engineer degree. And that, man, had I to do it again, you know, knowing that I'd be in this position, an engineering degree, a finance degree would have been really helpful. Yeah, what was your degree in?
So my undergrad degree was in political science, of all things,
yeah.
And then got an MBA from Georgia State.
And this is Casey Boyce, my co-host today from Decatur. And Casey, I mean, you're using your political science degree now because you're on this board, right, in Decatur? What is that about?
Yeah, so I am on the Zoning Board of Appeals in Decatur, and basically we hear really exciting things like setbacks and stream buffer variances and things of that sort.
Yeah, so did you think it was going to be a cooler position when you took it, or did you know what you were getting into?
No, I knew what I was getting into. This is my community service.
Yeah, and so... But you're kind of geeky, right? You enjoy getting into the weeds on stuff?
I do indeed, yes. And as you and I have talked about before, I was involved very early on with the Beltline in Atlanta, and so have some professional expertise with those sort of things.
Does Decatur have the equivalent of a Beltline?
Not really. We call it the Dequator, and it's where the tracks run kind of right down the middle of town, and there is a bike trail that runs adjacent to the tracks there, but it's not quite the Beltline.
Is there still an active train on the tracks?
Yep.
Yeah. So what's the safety of that?
Up to the user.
Yeah.
So they do have, I think, three crossings that they've been re-engineering. Every once in a while, someone says, hey, we should put a bridge over those tracks or dig a tunnel underneath them. But that's a little bit more expensive than what many people think it might be.
You know, we've talked before about the Beltline. It's a cool amenity in Atlanta, really more than an amenity now. But there are certain places where cars cross over it. And I recently crossed over Irwin Street around the Croc Street Market, and I thought, man, this thing was, it was on a Sunday, this thing is packed. I wonder how many people have been hit at this intersection, and just in general, probably not a good idea.
Yeah, they need to put those train crossing arms there for pedestrians on the Beltline. Wouldn't that be cool, bring back some of that old train infrastructure?
Yeah, that would be a great idea. You know, I was over in Holland, not paid for at state expense, by the way, but I was over in Holland looking at some technologies. And one of the things they had was something called a bike scout.
What's that?
This bike scout was a sensor that was at every curb cut where a car would pull out of a business, And you know how when you're pulling out like onto a busy street, that you'll maybe you'll pull your car up onto the sidewalk, the crosswalk,
mm-hmm.
Before you go out. And this is actually something that tells both the biker and the driver of the car bike. There's a bike approaching.
Oh, so interesting.
It sees the bike, and if there's no bike, then it stays green. But if there is a bike, it will give a yellow or a red signal.
Very interesting. I wonder if that's something that could be put into place on North Avenue, where they've got the smart street in Atlanta developed, where they're sensing bikes and things like that.
Yeah, we're talking technology, which we do a lot on Energy Matters. And Twitter's important to us as well. I'm at Tim Eccles. He's at Casey Boyce. But we got a question from Simon. And
yeah.
Give us his Twitter handle and his question.
Sure. So this is Simon Mahan. It's S-I-M-O-N-M-A-H-A-N. And he wanted us to talk a little bit about avoided cost methodology and process, how the customer renewable supply procurement is coming along, and Second Life EV batteries. And Commissioner, I think this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, so why don't you explain avoided cost methodology? You take the first one, I'll take the second two.
Sure. So in terms of avoided cost, there's this idea within utilities that the pricing happens on the margin, and that avoided cost is basically what you would spend to procure a kilowatt hour that you would need to at any given point. And so I think what Simon is asking here is that the commission has agreed to take a look at the methodology by which Georgia Power determines its avoided cost. I think he's just wondering what's that going to look like for the commission.
As a part of our triennial planning, and this came out of the 1991 integrated resource planning legislation. There was a paradigm shift, Casey, in 1991. Really, after the first two nuclear reactors went way over budget, the power company had also built some coal units that they were not able to get recovery for. And this public policy trend, we'll call it a shiny object, was kind of sweeping the country at the time. Our legislature passed it by about 2-to-1 measure. And essentially gives the utility a little less risk. So if they go to the Public Service Commission or Public Utility Commission in some states, as it's called, and they get a project certified, it could be any kind of project. It could be solar, nuclear, gas, anything. Then they are guaranteed to get their recovery on that, assuming that everything is built prudently. And so we created this paradigm in our legislature, and the power company began to operate under that because there had been a couple of instances where they had not received recovery. So the avoided cost methodology, as we made this decision this past integrated resource plan about adding more solar, about closing five additional coal units, this very topic came up. And I think Simon was actually there because I think I remember him retweeting and posting some photos during the hearing. But we decided, hey, we need to review this. It's time to review this, not just what the cost is, but it's the methodology that
come up with it, right?
That determines what the cost is. And you know, one of the things that the solar community has said is, look, you're giving us a certain solar, quote, solar avoided cost, but our solar's doing more than you're giving us credit for, right? You're giving us a little credit for lack of line loss. And folks, explain what line loss is to our audience.
Yeah, so basically, think about it like friction for electricity, right? Is that anytime you're sending electricity any distance, there's going to be some inefficiency in it. And so you'll lose some of that electricity to the lines.
Yeah, and so there's this line loss that if you use energy locally, let's say here at our radio studio, if we had solar on top, and Cox Enterprises has solar on a lot of their facilities around the United States, but if we had it here on this facility, then the electrons would be mostly used here, right?
That's right, yep.
Yeah, and so there wouldn't be any line loss.
That's right.
So it's more efficient.
It is.
So then we have this issue of congestion on circuits where you're in a really busy area. Explain congestion and transformers and how the grid kind of gets really really traffic-y.
Yeah, so basically it's if a lot of people in a certain area are using electricity at the same time, that it, you know, all of the equipment is built to handle a certain amount of power coming through it, and it can accommodate fluctuations. But if you've got a lot of people wanting to use electricity at one time, it can really, you know, get to a place where the grid can't handle it. They can't, you know, they can't put more electricity in through the transformers, et cetera.
Yeah, so the idea with DG, or distributed generation, having solar on your roof, is that you... Kind of help allay that problem.
That's right.
You put that solar where it's needed, and you actually use it right there, and it keeps you maybe from having to upgrade that transformer or upgrade the system, right?
That's right. Yeah. So you either use it on your house or business, or it goes to other folks who are on that same circuit.
Because a lot of the solar that we have in our state, and I am proud of the strides that we've made, and you know, relatively speaking, it's good for us considering the circumstances. But most of it is down in middle and south Georgia in a very poor county in the middle of nowhere. And so it does have to travel some ways, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it makes a big difference economically for those communities, but it's a very different thing to build these big, massive solar farms and move that electricity to the load centers, the cities and, you know, towns where it's being used, versus a business putting it up on their roof.
So back to Simon's question, you know, is this process going to be, reevaluated? And the answer is yes, and I'm not sure, you know, what the answer will wind up being, but I know that there will be parties of, on many sides essentially making the case for adding things to the formula, doing adders to give it additional value.
And the commission's going to start looking at this in early 2020, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, we'll look at this 2020, 2021. He also asked about the renewable supply procurement development coming along, and we definitely approved a lot of additional solar. And what I think he's talking about is how are you going to take these megawatts that you've approved, and how are you going to acquire that solar? And certainly it will be on most of it on some kind of a bid basis, is market driven. And that the surprise, Casey, on this for me, as we've done this on kind of a market basis, is that it's by having companies compete against each other, and when they come in below the avoided cost, it essentially has fractionally lowered rates for everybody on the system,
which
right?
is great, right? And I think for this particular program as well, if I'm not mistaken, this is driven a lot by corporate buyers of renewable energy. So Facebook, for instance, which is putting in a data center to the east of Georgia, to the east of Atlanta, and they really wanted to power that data center with solar. And so that was one of the things that was a driver behind this program.
That's right. We're having more and more companies who want to build something here, distribution center, data center, office, and they're saying, but we would like to power it with renewable energy. And to the power company's credit, they want to be able to satisfy that customer. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about customer satisfaction here and being kind of consumer-centric. And I think the power company gets it. They've seen the numbers. They know it's important.
Well, and they've looked at what's happened in Nevada, and they don't want that to happen, where the casinos out there have said, NV Energy, if you're not giving us renewables, we're leaving your system.
Tim Eccles here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work, from tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation. They'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to solarsunworld.com. That's solarsunworld.com.
Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy
right.
Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable.
Energy Matters would like to thank Gas South for its support of the show. Gas South has a no-deposit policy and offers some of the lowest per-therm rates in the state. Use the promo code MATTERS for a special deal. Gas South, the difference is good.
Welcome back to Energy Matters. I'm Casey Boyce, and I am here with your regular host, Tim Eccles.
Hey, everybody.
And we are talking about some questions that were sent to us over Twitter, and we are tackling the last of Simon Mahan's questions about Second Life EV batteries. So, Tim, what is a Second Life EV battery?
Yeah, I actually saw it on Twitter. we were amidst these hearings, and I'm a big EV fan. I've had three of them. And I saw this posting from EVgo in California about some recycled BMW i3 batteries at University of California, San Diego. And as I drilled down and then Googled it and then found a press release and then called the guy on the press release, had a conversation, and began to think about, well, you know, some of these vehicles, they have a battery replacement because it's gone beyond what the manufacturer would tolerate. The batteries are being, I guess, warehoused or put somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to think, wow, it's difficult to recycle lithium ion. How cool would it be for us to containerize some old EV batteries, use a high-tech battery management system, and essentially create some new EV chargers out of old batteries? It sounded like a great repurposing story.
Huh. So two things. One, what you're saying is that when the battery no longer works in an electric vehicle, it's still got some life left in it, right?
Yeah, because if it goes down beyond a certain number of bars, the manufacturer says, well, you know, this is beyond the tolerance. This is within the warranty of what we guaranteed. So bring it in. We're going to give you a new battery. So they put a new one in, but where does the old one go?
Right. And so you said connecting that with EV chargers. Why is that important to make that linkage?
Well, putting them in a container and putting them at a place maybe that doesn't have a lot of EV chargers, or where like Cox Enterprises has the Pivot facility where they're literally charging hundreds of vehicles every day, bringing in cars of all different types, and you know, serving as a fleet services for different manufacturers, and they're needing to fill those cars up. Having a Second Life battery where you don't even necessarily have to use energy off the grid real time. So maybe you filled up those batteries at night,
mm-hmm,
with cheap electricity, and now you're going to dispense it during the day.
That's right. Because, you know, one of the problems with public fast charging, particularly these big facilities like the Cox Pivot facility, is that they draw a lot of electricity at the same time, right? And so for commercial customers of the utility, there's this thing called the demand charge, which is basically, it's based on how much electricity you draw at any one given time. So if you're charging six cars at a time, that's going to cost you a whole lot more, even if you're only doing that once during a month, right?
Yeah, that's right. Our demand charges aren't like California and other places where companies are at risk like they are there. But we still have issues about this, and obviously it's a limitation if you're trying to charge a lot of different vehicles or buses or shuttle vans or anything like that, and you're doing it all at the same time. It can, especially in the middle of the day, if you're on a time of use rate or something like that, it can really spike your bill. So there's a lot of value to using batteries for this purpose.
And so the Second Life EV batteries, is there a project that's going to be happening here in Georgia for using those for EV charging?
Yeah, so during our integrated resource plan, the commissioners kind of have the final say. There's a lot of people that have input into how the Georgia grid works. Everybody gets their input, our staff gets their input, the power company gets their input, and then it comes time for approval. And so commissioners sometimes have little pet projects, little pet amendments. And in this case, I had a little pet amendment, and it was to allow the power company to create a Second Life EV charging facility or container or site. And we capped it at $250,000 because the EVgo guys in California told me that they thought we could do that for $250,000. So let's try one of them, see how it works, and then if it is something that we're successful with, maybe 3 years down the road when we get into our energy planning in 2022, we try it again.
And where are those batteries coming from? Are they coming mostly from the used Nissan Leafs or are they all over?
As we got into it, we discovered that you could buy used Nissan Leafs batteries for about $900.
Wow.
And so we found a group in Birmingham, not affiliated with the Southern Company, but it was affiliated with the research facility there that was trying one of these, not for EV charging, but just as a battery container, just as like a utility-scale battery, using Second Life EVs, EV batteries to do that. So I put our staff and Georgia Power in touch with this group of researchers. They were this project in Birmingham was being paid for by a Chinese firm that has a battery management firm, and they wanted to have that tested by academic types, you know, in a laboratory setting to be able to sell it in the future. And then, of course, EVgo came to our aid out in California, where they've already done this a couple times. And Georgia Power and Cox Enterprises, through the Cox Pivot facility, they're talking to them. Cox, at the Pivot facility, they're really interested in hosting this actual container.
Okay, so this wasn't hypothetical. This is really
For Cox and Pivot, they want this on their site.
Yeah.
And Georgia Power is going to evaluate all possible sites, then bring it back to the commission for final approval. One of the things that we wanted to make sure is that there is some public benefit to this.
Sure.
We don't want to just use this money and benefit a single company or a single manufacturer. We want the public to benefit from this. So it probably needs to be outside the fence, so to speak, where the public could access these chargers as well.
Well, that would be very cool. You know, it's funny. I saw a picture the other day of an EV fast charger that was hooked up to a big stationary diesel generator. I think that's missing the point. Batteries sound a lot cleaner.
That is missing the point. I was out in California for the Verge conference. I'm not sure if you've heard of the Verge.
I was at the very first one in D.C.
Folks can just Google Verge, V-E-R-G-E. But I met a company there that was called Envision.
Okay.
And Envision, they were really in the emergency response business. They were creating a solar array on a trailer that you could take into an emergency area, let's say a hurricane zone after the hurricanes come through and everybody's out of power, and maybe power the camp there for emergency workers. Well, as they've evolved, they've connected EV chargers to it, and Envision really is growing this network of portable chargers.
Very interesting.
So you can hook this up to an F-150, you pull it into an area, outfolds all the solar panels, and it even has a fast charger connected to it.
Very interesting.
With some batteries. So what I'm hoping, and this kind of gets into my interest in sports car racing, is that I'm hoping Road Atlanta, for their Petit Le Mans, which is their signature event every fall, is that they will create an EV corral. And if you've ever been to the race, you know what I'm talking about. It's where all the Corvettes who are watching the race, they all pay a little extra fee and they park their cars together. The BMWs park together.
Yep.
The Porsches park together. I want an EV corral where the EVs park together. But if you do that, you need a charger.
For sure.
And what I'm trying to get is someone in Georgia to buy an Envision system that then can be taken to various places and used for charging, and especially at an event like the Petit Le Mans. But certainly the Ray Day could use it. There's a lot of events that could use this as an amenity. Maybe they just rent it for the weekend. So either having someone like Penske or Hertz buy one and then rent it out, or even having like the utility buy it and brand it and use it for their own marketing. I mean, what do you think about that
idea? I think that's a great idea. I mean, you hit on some times when you've got a bunch of EVs in a location that they aren't usually there. And so being able to bring in portable charging for something like that, it's very visible. People can see solar panels from a long way away and people are curious about it. Have them come talk to the EV owners, see how they like them. And I'll tell you, having driven an EV, you know, those Porsche and Corvette guys can certainly enjoy an EV.
Yeah, that's right. And you don't want to put a bunch of chargers in a place where you're not going to have regular traffic.
Exactly.
Because you don't want to waste the money. So using a portable charger like the Envision system only makes sense.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. And, of course, you've been on the Ray, and we've talked a lot about the Ray and all the developments, Allie and Harriet and those guys, and they're continuing to test technology. I have started, and we talked about it on the show, I've started challenging other kind of geographic areas in Georgia to consider something like this. In Dublin, they have three exits on I-16 heading from Macon to Savannah. I was at my Clean Energy Roadshow. I had the mayor of Forsyth, Georgia, Macon, Georgia, and Centerville, Georgia. That is a stretch of 40 miles on I-75. And so I challenged them, hey, you know, why don't you take the things that the Ray has learned over in that LaGrange I-85 area, and you guys make this a Middle Georgia Green Corridor.
Is Georgia DOT open to doing that in other areas?
You know, I think they are, but someone's going to have to bring a big pot of money, because sure. That's what the Ray C. Anderson Foundation has done. They haven't just shown up with ideas. They've shown up with a wallet full of money and said, we'll partner with you.
Yeah.
And so far, we haven't really found other partners for DOT and someone really to spend their political capital on something like this.
Yeah, well, I mean, you talked about it in a previous segment, right? Just the amount of solar development that's been happening in Central and South Georgia, and it seems like doing some of that median solar along I-75 or I-16 would be a great use of that space.
Yeah, and we'll see how the project goes in LaGrange, if it is everything that we hope, because as you know, Casey, sometimes these projects don't turn out quite the way you would hope. There's additional problems that surface, and that's the beauty of testing pilot programs. And the Ray Solar Project down at exit 14 off of I-85 is, in fact, a pilot project.
Yep, so you can learn, and the Georgia Power Company can learn as well, right?
That's right.
Yep.
Well, you've been listening to Energy Matters. Casey Boyce is here with me. We've been talking about really covering some questions from Twitterverse. We've been talking about various things, both utilities.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.